everybody. Recruiting Animal here on July 21st, 2010. Yesterday, at this very same time, at lunchtime, I listened to a webinar that was jam-packed with interviewing advice for job hunters, and it was given by Janice Worthington, exec job coach. She's a regular on this show, but that's not the reason I thought it was good. You know why I thought it was good? I thought it was good because it was listenable. She didn't put me to sleep. That's why I liked it. And there was good stuff in it, too. And one of the best pieces of advice was, don't be a zombie. Don't be a zombie. If someone says something to you in an interview, at least nod your head to show you're still alive. And by coincidence, I spoke to a zombie this morning. I heard it yesterday from Janice, and I spoke to a zombie this morning, and it was on the phone. And it's especially important, let me tell you, not to be a zombie when you're on the phone. I would say something to this guy, and it would just vanish into thin air. I kept asking him, are you still there? The guy would say, yeah, and then it was dead silence again. He was a loser. But that wasn't the only reason. I told him about the job I was recruiting for, and he said, been there, done that. And in fact, he hadn't been there. And he hadn't done that. And I had to tell him, and he didn't take it well. But back to the zombies. This guy I spoke to this morning, he had a wife. So being boring didn't keep him from getting married. And he had a job. So being boring won't keep you from getting work. And in fact, I have friends who are zombies. So being a zombie won't keep you from having friends. But you know what? It won't help you either. Because when the zombies call me, I try to avoid their calls. And in my experience, for all of you job search coaches out there and job hunters, you can't change a zombie. Unlike the real thing, a candidate zombie is born, not made. Even if you train him to nod his head, he's still going to be a zombie. I'd rather teach a budgie, because you don't expect a budgie to be able to carry on a conversation. And that's something I look for in a human being. It's something I demand from the guests on this show. You hear that, Peggy? I'm talking to you, Peggy McKay, the medical sales recruiter. She's my guest today on Jerry. What's your advice?
The Recruiting Animal Show.
Thank you, Jerry. Jerry's not here. Jerry just called me. He's in some park with his kids. But I taped them, so I don't really need them anymore to ever come back. Hey, Peggy, are you here?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can hear you. Thank you. I'm just going to introduce you, Peggy. Peggy is the medical sales recruiter. That's what she likes to call herself. On Twitter, she's at sales recruiter. Her website is phcconsulting.com. She also has a lot of job search videos on YouTube. I like them. And her coaching website is career-confidential.com. I don't like those hyphens, but that's another story. Anything to say before I move on, Peggy?
Thank you so much for offering me the opportunity to come on your show, Michael. That's all.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome, dear. Now, you know what? I want to sing the exact same song that we sang last time that you didn't know. You live in Texas now, somewhere outside of Dallas, but you're originally from Oklahoma, and I want to sing Oklahoma Hills. Do you know that song?
God, no, I don't know that song. Can't we just sing this, like, Oklahoma, the actual song named Oklahoma?
No, no. You should have told me you wanted that before we started. Does anybody else here? Does anybody know Oklahoma?
See, there's someone who knows the real Oklahoma song.
No, no. Does anyone know Oklahoma Hills?
I listen to it. It's hard.
Okay, anyway, I'm going to sing with Johnny Cash then.
Many months have come and gone
since I wandered from my home
in
those Oklahoma hills where I was born.
I come in now?
Not yet. I'll tell you when, okay?
Don't come in yet. Many a page of life has turned. Many a lesson I have learned. Yet I feel, Peggy.
Right. I do belong.
It's in the... Hey, I don't want to sing with Johnny. I'm just going to sing a little more. Way down yonder on the Indian Nation, ride my pony on the reservation. I'll stop now on the Oklahoma Hills. Okay. What's your favorite cheese, Peggy?
My favorite cheese?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's tough. I like old cheese, so I guess I'd say probably feta cheese on salad. I like cheddar
cheese. Okay, forget it. I'm not interested. You know what? I started deleting the shows after I record them and then slicing them up. They're always good now. I don't have to worry about the live shows. They're a half an hour when they're finished. I'll cut out my song. I'll cut out your cheese. Let's get straight to the real questions, okay, Peggy?
Okay.
You gave
All
me
right.
the order you wanted to have them in. How many more placements does a skilled recruiter make? Now, this is a question from Jerry Albright, who's not here today. He said there's a number of placements, a certain number, percentage of placements that won't happen unless you dig in and do it right. What do you think the number is, the percentage?
Well, I can't give you the actual numbers. I can give you percentages, but I went back and looked at, when you sent me this question, I went back and looked at my placements versus the folks that work for me, which I know that sounds does that make me the skilled recruiter or them the skilled recruiter? But I'll tell you that I make more placements than two people in my firm. So does that make me 100%
better?
When did
they start? Last week? How long have they been recruiters?
One of them has been recruiting, over 10 years. The other one's been recruiting 2 years.
Okay.
I'm putting that out there because I think it's important to share that information, and maybe there's someone on here who can say, well, then that means you've got a problem. But I think the difference is I'm like an anaconda compared to them. I'm not going to – there's no stone that I leave unturned, and there's no question that I won't ask, and there's no one that I won't call. And so I think that means that I'm going to make a significant number more placements than – any other recruiter, then unless I'm going up against a Jerry Albright, right? Now, he's probably one of those folks who's going to outperform other recruiters on a 2-to-1 basis, I think, as well. I think his number 10% is low.
Mm-hmm. Now, listen, Peggy, you can't get away with saying that stuff without giving us a story. What questions do you ask that they won't ask? Who do you talk to that they won't talk to?
Okay, well, I'm going to go back to one of your questions that you just sent me before the show about counteroffers. That right there is huge. I can't believe that if there's a recruiter on here who won't talk to a candidate about counteroffers, well, then I'm going to smoke them because I'm always going to have that conversation. If I've got someone who's going to get an offer, then I'm going to have the conversation about counteroffers before that offer comes so that I'm never going to have somebody call me and tell me that he's accepted a counteroffer without me already having set a bias against that. And if they call me and say they've accepted one, it's going to be a very difficult conversation for them because we'll have already crossed that bridge, right? So that's something that I think an unskilled recruiter might not take on every search. In fact, I know they don't.
Why not?
They don't understand how valuable that is to their end point. They don't realize the percent loss that they might have because they don't uncover that, and they don't take the time to do it. They're not as focused, I don't think, on wrapping up every part of it.
Well, it's not good for them either.
What did you say?
This is Janice. Hi, Peggy. It's not good for these job seekers either to accept counteroffers.
Oh, no, it isn't good for them. So what I do, so you want the story. So when I'm talking to a candidate, let's say that Janice is my candidate, and I've got her in a final interview, or maybe she's even completed the final interview, but usually I'm going to have talked about it before the final interview, and I'm going to say, look, Janice, I know that your current company really values you. Obviously, they've promoted you over the years. They've done this. They've done that. You yourself have said how wonderful and the experience that you've had there. But you need to understand that, when you came to me or when we started talking about this company that you're interviewing with now, there were some certain things that we're not missing, that were missing, that you were not getting, whatever those were. I remind her of those things, right? Because that's the conversation that I had earlier. And I say, is that right? And she says, yes. And I say, so now you do know that if my company, if you go through this final interview, because, again, I want to try to do it before the final interview. If you go through this final interview and then that my company extends you an offer, it's very likely that your company is going to come back and extend you a counteroffer, isn't it? And I wait and listen to what she says. Because there's two kinds of answers. One is, oh, no, they won't. But even if they do, Peggy, you've got to understand, I clearly understand they can't fix the problem that I have with my employment here. No offer is going to take care of that. It could only be, they could try to alleviate some of the symptoms or this or that. But, you know, without a doubt, a counteroffer is not going to affect my decision. If this organization makes me the offer that you and I have been talking about and I get the responsibilities that we were looking for, well, then I'm going to accept that job and go on. Okay, so that's the first answer. And then if you get that one, you say, great, you know, let me know if I need to remind you of that and go on down the road, right? If they say, oh, no, no, I don't think they will. I really don't think they'll give me a counteroffer. They never have before. Or, gosh, you think? And you hear that voice, you know. And that's when I say, but now listen up. You need to understand, Janice. Do you know that there's a statistic out there that 66% of folks who take a counteroffer are gone in less than 9 months afterwards? And Janice is going to say, really? And I'm going to say, yeah, why do you think that is? And Janice is going to say, God, I don't know. And I'm going to say, well, let me tell you, Janice, here's why, okay? Because they can't fix the problem that you said you had with the job, okay? Or they would have already fixed it. And if they try to fix it now, why didn't they try to fix it before? I'm fixing it proactively with a company that has no experience with you, who's willing to put themselves out on the edge to bring you into their organization, welcome you with welcome arms, deal with all these things that your current company hasn't done, and provide you with X, Y, and Z that you said were also very important for you, blah, blah, blah. So see, I'm going to use all the things that she's told me before, right, to bring her back to, the fact that her current company has neglected her, they can't provide it, they can't do it. If they do, why didn't they do it before, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to say, Janice, so you understand that what will happen, and I've actually had a candidate do this, Janice. He took the counter offer. The organization, you know, it was a financial issue plus a title issue, and they did all that. And then like 4 months later, he was on the job market again looking for another job because they didn't fix the issue. And now he's on the job market looking for another job, and I know that he took the counteroffer when he said he wouldn't, and my client knows that he took the counteroffer when he said it wouldn't, and the company knows that. And so he's got this big black mark on himself as far as reputation about what he'll do, you know, how serious he is when he's in the job search, things like that. Or I can tell Janice a story about someone who has taken the counteroffer and then 6 months later the company let him go on a layoff because they got what they needed and stabilized the situation, and then they let him go because guess what? A little rat twerp was out looking for a job when he was still working for them, and they never forget it.
Right. So
what if they say to you, Peggy, where'd you get that statistic about 60% of counteroffers don't work?
I say take a look on the internet and look up counteroffers and statistics for those who stay and turn over afterwards.
Yeah, okay. I've checked.
So many articles about that, and you're totally right. This is Kathy. I gave a big seminar on this, and you're right. Just to make it very, very brief, you're looked at as a traitor if you accept that counteroffer, and you will be gone, like you said, within 6 months.
I want to get a boss in here who can say, yeah, I treat my people like a traitor after. I mean, this is kind of all hearsay. Well, except if Peggy tells stories about real-life experience, that's right. Those other statistics, I don't trust them. They're made by self-serving recruiters. That's my point.
Yeah,
okay?
But I don't think that's – I know I have actually seen that actual statistic in a paper, Michael. The reason I'm not going to tell you the exact one is I don't know the name right now. But I'm not going and doing, you know – recreational research for my candidate. If he wants to see where that's at, he can go and look at it, because I'm telling him the things to Google.
I've seen learned papers online that said George W. Bush blew up the World Trade Center. Those things don't mean anything online,
and then
you
saw those counter papers about how Obama was going to fix our economy, too, right?
Well, okay.
But
that's
how can an employer ever look at an employee the same when he knows he's been? It's kind of like a.
Absolutely. Well, here's the deal. It's like fooling around, Michael.
Yep.
You're in a relationship with a chick. She goes out with another guy while you're still with her. What the hell's up with that? You can't ever trust her again. She's walked on the wild side once. She'll do it again, and
agreed.
So will your candidate.
Okay.
I don't
agree
with that.
Who's that? Oh, Cliff.
Yeah.
Cliff Mintz, the PhD. The PhD who knows about papers. Go ahead.
Right.
Louder.
Oh, Peggy, too.
Louder. Okay,
that's
enough. Okay, fine. I don't care. So next question. Thanks very much.
Now, wait a second, though. Let's talk about this and see if you don't agree. Michael, would you not say that if someone worked for you, if you knew that they'd went out and gone through, you know, three or four interviews and actually received an offer from a company that must have thought that they were going to take it or they wouldn't have offered it, because we all know how this whole thing goes, right? So wouldn't you think that if you had someone who went and did that, you would remember that every
don't,
time?
Don't you know the song, don't you, baby, please come home for Christmas, baby, please come back, I'll be good, I'll make it nice for you. If you want to talk that lingo, okay?
Oh, absolutely. There's always someone who's going to do that, but they're going to lose out because baby's only coming home for Christmas and she'll be gone by Valentine's Day.
Depends on the level of the employee who you're recruiting for. That's what I think, particularly in the life sciences industry and even in academia, which is totally a different animal. You have to go out and get a job offer to get what you want to stay in the place. But in pharmaceutical companies that I've recruited for and worked for, I know executives, you know, starting at the senior director up to the VP levels that have gone out and gotten job offers. People have known they've been looking around. It's in the industry. They turn down the job offers. They stay with the company. And I know one guy who had 10 job offers over the last 10 years, and he was with the company for 10 years after he started first interviewing. So I think it depends on the level. If you're a lower-level employee and you're dispensable and you don't bring any talent to the company, which is 95% of the employees, it may be an issue. But to say that, you know, you're always going to lose your job if there's a counter offer, you turn it down, you know, I don't buy that.
Okay. Oh, now, wait a second. There's a counter offer and you turn it down. We're talking about you would be in trouble with your current employer if you turn it down.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, the thing is, in order to demonstrate your worth, you could play the game on your situation. I don't think you get summarily traitor. Everybody does it. People that aren't talking about the fact that they're interviewing, we just don't want them to know, because there could be retribution, particularly in recessionary times. But again, it depends on the level that the employee is at. If you're a salesperson,
you know, you sound like you're at the bottom of a swimming pool. I got your point. I can't let you go
you
on before
what?
I lose
I have
my
sales.
Audience. No. What?
I don't think everybody does.
I can't hear you. Enough. Now, Peggy, let me thank you, Cliff. Now, Peggy, let me go back. So there's counteroffers. It's something that a good recruiter handles and a bad recruiter doesn't. Anything else that you would, highlight at that point?
Well, I think there's a lot of questions that great recruiters ask that the less skilled ones don't. Number one, Mr. Manager, I understand you're giving me this job, this job order. You're looking for someone. So how soon are you looking to have someone on board? Oh, you know, by August 31st, maybe September 1. Great. Mr. Manager, if I were to find a couple candidates this week that I felt like were perfect for the position, when could we expect that we would do the first set of interviews, and what will those first set be? Okay? Because I want to know exactly, because what will happen is a rookie recruiter gets a job order. They're in this market. They're so damn thrilled to have one that they're like, woohoo, and they're gone, right, to go to find someone, right? Whereas a strong one says, now, wait a second. Tell me about the power you've got in this hiring process. Tell me about what your expectations are for yourself, because, you know, if you're not going to start doing phone interviews for another month and a half, then I'm going to put this on hold. This isn't urgent, you see? And that's a big difference. It's all about, and it's about valuing your time. A rookie recruiter doesn't value their time and will use it on anything. A skilled recruiter sees their time as money and is only going to use it when they've pre-qualified that if they spend the time and they are successful, they will get success financially. Am I wrong?
Okay, you know. Yeah, well, hold on a second. Let's go back to that qualification. There's a guy named D-List Recruiter. I don't know who wants to call themselves that. I don't know who it really is. But he asked me, he or she, to ask someone how a good recruiter will qualify a job order, to know that it's a good one versus a bad one. So you say, ask them, when are you going to be ready for the first round of interviews? That's question number one, right?
Well, and how long has this job order been open? If you get a job order that's been open for 6 months, that's a big red flag that this may not be a good job order, that either the manager isn't serious, the organization isn't serious, or what they're looking for isn't commensurate with what they're willing to pay, or, you know, there's some issue there. So, you know, the first way that you might qualify a good job order is how long have you had it, and why has it been that long, why is it open, when was the last time you hired someone, what is your process? What is your expectation? can you agree that if I
what
provide
XYZ... What do you mean, what's your expectation? What does that mean?
Well, your expectation. I, you know, you'll get some managers who they want to talk to 7 candidates or 8 candidates or 10 candidates before they'll ever move forward with a face-to-face, or they want to be able to, they want to know that they've screened through 7 or 8. And so my problem, or what I have done in the past before I became so skilled, see, we can all, you know, try to work toward that skilledness, right, is that I don't feel that way. If I interview 3 great candidates, I can pick one and move forward, no problem, right? But there are other managers out there who have a number in mind of candidates that they want to see and talk with, no matter what level they are, before they'll pull the trigger. So they may have their best candidate in the first one that you present, but they have a checkbox that they want to check off where they're going to have, they have to have, see 6, 7, 8 more candidates before they're going to close the door on that.
If the guy says, I want to see 5 candidates, what are you going to say in return?
I'm going to say, okay, well, and see, this goes back to that job order, right? Do you want an exclusive job order, or do you want one where there might be other people working on it, right? Which one, what are we saying there?
You tell me how you handle it. I don't know. Are you a contingency recruiter or retained search?
I'm a contingency recruiter. So they can have other recruiters recruiting, but a lot of times I have almost an exclusive relationship with my customers. So, like in that case, though, the 5 candidates, if they say they want to see 5 candidates, then in my mind, my job is to find them 5 of the best so that they don't step outside of, and that would be my question, I guess. Hey, Mr. Manager, if I can find you those 5 candidates that you say you need to screen before X date, can I have your commitment that you're not going to call another firm because I'm going to satisfy your requirements?
Uh-huh. That's good. But I would say five good candidates, too many. That's a lot of work. How do you know you're going to find 5
people? Well, I'm going to, between you and I and the 300 people that listen to this show, you don't. You find 3 that are great and 2 that are fillers.
Okay.
Is that shocking?
Let me ask another question out of order here. But do you wait till you have 3 good people to send them out for interviews, or will you send them 1 person at a time?
I send them the moment I've qualified them to the point that I'm ready to present them, because I have lost. Again, this goes back to that skilled versus non-skilled. Other recruiters don't see the urgency in this, but I have lost $10,000 over 5 minutes. You know.
Uh huh.
In numerous different ways, okay? And so the moment you have a candidate that's qualified, you want to get them in front of the manager so that the manager's not thinking that perhaps you're not going to be able to fill the job. He sees that you've got candidates. He's not reaching out to the other recruiters. Or you want to show him that candidate so that he doesn't go for the person that HR wants him to hire because they're trying to slide someone over from one other division. You see?
Uh-huh.
You give him battle weapons, if you will, in the fight for why you don't want to, he doesn't have to inherit the stepchild. So, I mean, I've lost a lot of money over 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. So I see a tremendous sense of urgency, and I want to get qualified or even close to qualified candidates in front of a manager ASAP.
Okay. Do you want to give us any other points where you think a skilled recruiter is going to make more money than an unskilled recruiter?
Well, we can go on all day about this. There's
okay, let me say, does anybody have a question? There's a lot of people on the line. Anybody else want to have a question or raise an issue with Peggy McKee at Sales Recruiter, phcconsulting.com?
This is Mike Astringer. Can I ask a question on a different topic?
Yeah. Oh, no, I have your question set up for her, but go ahead, ask her this one. I told her about your last week's question that nobody could answer. Go ahead.
And this doesn't even apply to that. So, Peggy, I followed you on Twitter for a long time, and I value your opinions and your experience. I have a question for you about the clients that you work with. Do you typically extend offers to your candidates, or do the clients do it? And part two of that question is, I know there are some companies out there that feel that a third-party vendor cannot bind them in a contract or an employment relationship. So what are your feelings on that?
Okay, so number one, I don't want to be able to bind someone into a contract or into a relationship in terms of a candidate, if that's what that second piece is. The first piece is I do exactly what my client wants or what I see is best for my outcome. All right, does that sound bad? So what I'm saying about that is, if my client is very comfortable with extending the offer, and I'm very comfortable with their ability to sell through any issues that they might find with my candidate or anything that comes up. And then, and if they say, hey, we want to extend Susie an offer, is it okay if we go ahead and give them a call? I say, great, okay. Now, if they call me and they say, we want to extend an offer to Susie, do you want to do it or do you want me to? If it's a great manager, I'll say, hey, you go ahead, all right? And that is, I will tell you, that's different than what I used to do. I used to would have always wanted to take control of it. At this point, I can't do everything. So if I have a strong manager that I trust and know that he can deal with the issues that might arise in that offer situation, I'll let him extend it.
Do you know what he's going to offer and what she's going to accept in advance?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Because I know exactly what my pay scales are and what the ranges are going to be. And I've already usually talked with the managers about it, made sure that we're all on the same page. I've already pre-qualified the candidate for, so you are telling me that if I were to find you this position with this pay, with these benefits in this location, you'll accept the job. Yes, I will. Okay, great. Done. That's what I'm going to bring you.
Mike?
You know, so to go back to your question, I'll let them do it if I trust them. If I have a weak manager, and I have a company right now that has a weak manager, I try not to let him touch anything, okay? Because he's weak, and he could possibly lose me a job order or a candidate who we've got all the way to the end process because he's not strong enough to manage the situation. So with him, I'll say, hey, would you like me to give Monica a call and chat with her first? Sure, go ahead. Great, all right. That's what I do.
I have another question.
Does that answer the question?
It does very much. I do have another question regarding salary.
Okay.
So back many years ago when I sat on a contingency desk, I used to encourage my clients not to have salary discussions with candidates. But now that I work as a corporate HR consultant, I always address salary with candidates that come
from. Hey, hold on 1 second. Someone's having a conversation with the people in their office. Smarten up!
Tell them to mute the
thing. Hey! Wake up over there!
Who is it?
I don't know. I'm going to have to start trying to delete it. Come, okay, Mike, try to talk over.
I couldn't even hear Mike's question. Come on.
Mike,
Animal?
Start again, please. Mike.
So what I was saying was, you know, 100 years ago when I worked at contingency desk, I used to encourage my clients not to have salary conversations with candidates. But now that I work as a corporate HR and recruiting consultant, I always have salary conversations with my candidates, even though if it's from a third-party vendor, they've obviously sent me that information in advance. I confirm that information, and I continue to close that candidate on salary through the process, just like I would my own candidate. I'm curious of your thoughts on your end client having salary discussions with candidates.
Well, I don't tell them what to do or not to do. If I know that it's a sticky situation, I might try to do that a little bit to make sure that I get to handle all those conversations. But I think it's unrealistic to expect that your hiring manager wouldn't want to talk about money at some point possibly with a candidate. And I can tell you when I was the hiring manager, I always talked about money with my candidates because, and, you know, here it goes, I couldn't trust the damned recruiters because they would lie and tell them things that were absolutely not true about the job. And then I'd have this candidate in front of me that I was salivating for, and then when I'm talking to her about my pay, I realize that her expectation is not going to be something that I'm going to be able to fulfill. And so I've wasted my time and I've wasted hers, and, you know, I'm really ticked off at the recruiter for that. So I don't blame. And, in fact, if I were a hiring manager, I would have money conversations with my candidates. But as a recruiter, I would prefer them not to have money conversations just because two things, Mike. One, the manager could mess up. Two, my candidate could say something really stupid because they tend to say stupid things when you talk to them about salary, and I don't want them to look stupid or say something stupid that could hurt their candidacy that way.
Do you
either.
Prepare them for that, though?
I don't think you can, and you can't always know when that's going to come up. It always surprises me when it comes up versus when it doesn't. So, you know, what I tell candidates is, man, you never want to talk about money. You always want me talking about your money, okay? Because when you talk about your money, it becomes a personal conversation. It's difficult to remain objective and deal with it the way you should. So when they bring up money in the conversation, your answer should be hey, Peggy, you know, talk to me a little bit about that. It seemed totally commensurate with the responsibility. You know, it seemed to be right in line. I'm very excited about the position. If you're bringing up money, is that because you're thinking about making me an offer?
Peggy,
I don't want to dominate Animal's show, but it might be a little different because you are on the recruiting salespeople, but there is sort of a common consensus in the corporate world that third-party recruiters tend to inflate the salaries of their candidates so their commissions are larger. So it's a two-part question. A, outside of sales candidates, do you ask your candidates to verify their compensation? And B, what would be your answer if a client came back to you and said, I don't really believe that this person's making XYZ. Can you verify that for me?
I won't verify any of that. That's in my contract. I don't want to be responsible for that. That's not my job. My job is to hook you up with talent. You get to decide if you want to buy it or not, right? The second thing is I know so much about my industry that really and truly, if someone tells me a salary that's not in line, I can almost spot it, okay, and call them on that. And I do get into those conversations with them. And I here's another interesting thing. I won't present a candidate that won't tell me exactly what their compensation is. So if I get a candidate on the phone with me that doesn't want to talk about their money or their compensation, then I have to say, you know, sweetheart, we're done. Because I can't talk to someone that I can't understand and know fully of all the situations. So, you know, we're done.
As a corporate recruiter, I love you for that. And Animal, you can have your show back.
Thank you.
But I want to say one more thing. I want to go back.
Okay.
One more thing, Mike. So, but I am different in one thing. I never inflate what my managers say their pay scales are. And I never inflate what the pay is, the commission opportunity, or any of that. Because if I do that, see, again, going back to that skilled recruiter piece, I know that it will affect my stick rate. You see what I'm saying? And it'll come back to bite me as well, and I'm not interested in that. I want to be able to sleep well at night and defend anything that I've ever discussed. So I don't inflate those. I want the candidate to know exactly what the pay is. I want the manager to do exactly what he said he would do, and then we'll all go home happy.
Well, you know, when we started recruiting, I think we were taught how important our reputations are, but my view of many of today's third-party recruiters is that they could just as easily quit recruiting and start selling used cars somewhere. So I appreciate the way you conduct business.
Well, part of that, though, Mike, is because they've been kicked around by – hold on, Mike, Michael. They've been kicked around by corporate recruiters, and they have – it's been clearly communicated to the third-party recruiter that you are not a partner, okay? You are a vendor. We will use you at our pleasure, and then at that point when we want to, we won't. And so what they've done is they've thrown away the relationship, and once you do that, then no one's accountable, and that's where you get into those, you know, sticky situations where folks aren't representing things the way they should.
The problem there is I would love to have partners and I would love to have people that I work that closely with, but it's very, very difficult, in my opinion, to establish a trustful relationship with some vendors out there. I've just been burned so many times over the years. And, you know, if I could do business with somebody like you, I would love to have that kind of partner, but you seem to be few and far between.
Can I ask a question?
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Do you believe, Peggy or Mike, that the quality of the recruiting community went down when it was easy to be a recruiter, when companies needed talent, when things were opposite as they are today? To me, recruiters seem to be like little bugs all over the place, and there's many different kinds of them, and many of them don't know what they're doing, and I'm not sure they're being dishonest. I think maybe they are not well trained or because
yeah, okay, we got the point. We got the point. We
no problem.
You guys want to answer that, or like, who cares about the history of recruiting?
Well, here's the answer to her question. The problem is third-party recruiters, low bar of entry. You need a computer, you need a phone, and then you can say you're a recruiter if you can come up with a template for your contract. So it's a low bar of entry. So just anybody can come in here and hang up the shingle. So I don't think that. I think that you just have to look at longevity in their position, who recommends them, who they've done business with, what you've seen and heard about them. And if you don't see that, then don't do business with them, because why isn't there that data and testimonials there for you to see who they are and what they've done in the past?
And in my opinion, you could almost put a timeline on it. You know, you can say,
hey, what about me?
Who gets
a
control?
There's a guy on Twitter called Technical Stress, and he wants to say hello to you. Just because of his name, I thought you should know, okay? Mike Aestringer, last question for you, or just give, you know, other people a chance. What was that you wanted to say?
No, all I wanted to just comment on the question that was addressed to me, and then I can almost put...
No, I don't want to take over your show, but I'm going to talk for a half an hour. Sorry, what was that?
I just want to answer the question, and in my opinion, you can almost put a time on when the decline of third-party recruiters went down, and that's when the Internet was invented.
I don't care. I don't care about that stuff. Okay, Kathy Manis, did you have something you wanted to say? Kathy Manis,
I guess if I was talking about Twitter, he would have let me talk.
Jeez.
Oh, what are you on the phone for, too? Okay, look who's here back. Okay.
Thank you, Animal. I do have a couple of questions. Peggy,
But get right to the point. Everybody's making speeches. That's not what I'm interested in, okay?
Okay. How do you control the questions that your hiring manager asks of your candidates during the hiring process?
You
know what? You're not very clear. What did you say? How do you determine the questions that your hiring manager is going to answer?
How does she control the questions, the interview process on the hiring manager's end with
Peggy,
her candidate?
Peggy, answer. We heard the question. Go ahead.
Cannot control. I'd like to have some electrical gadgets that I could hook up to them, but I can't.
To both of them.
Do you worry about being sued?
Do I worry about being sued? You know, I don't. I've recruited for 11 years, and I haven't even gotten close to a lawyer or a nasty discussion or even a threat or anything. And it's interesting that you bring that up. I've got the insurance for errors and omissions, but I wonder if I should throw it away because I just don't think that I think I'm probably just paying money that I don't need to pay.
Well, I'm just thinking about OFCCP and everything that's come into play. That's all.
Okay. Anybody else got something to say before I go back to my questions? Who's that? Who said yes?
HR Margo from Cincinnati, Ohio. Hello, Animal.
Get right to the point, HR Margo. What do you want to ask or say?
I just wanted to say I think it's an excellent show. I really, really like your guest today. I think she's teaching a lot to the people that I support in the Hire Friday community. I told everyone in Hire Friday.
Are you giving a plug? Just say I want a plug. HR Friday. Don't give
like
us all
it.
That other stuff, okay?
Thank you.
Hey, Animal, let Margo get the website address in real quick. Shush.
Well, no, let me say.
Andy, my God.
I'm just kidding you, man. I love Margo. I'm just kidding.
That's hilarious.
Hi, Margo.
HRMargo.com. HRMargo.com. Thank you. Anybody else got a question?
I do.
Another one?
Yes.
No.
Preparing your candidates. I seem to get the idea that you think there are limitations on what candidates can learn. How well do you prepare your candidates?
Now, she's asking me that question. How well do I prepare my candidates?
Yeah, I had it in anyway, okay? So you can answer her. Go ahead.
All right. Okay, well.
Now, how did I put it, though? I put it a little differently, right? You can't teach.
You know what?
Said
interview coach. It's not possible to change people. That's Michael's question.
Yeah, well, listen, you know what? I read a story. There's a book called For the Three Christs of Ypsilanti. There's a mental hospital in Ypsilanti near Detroit. And there were three guys in there. They all thought they were Jesus. So the psychiatrist, this is a true story, he put them all in the same room. He figured sooner or later they're going to recognize I'm crazy just like those other two guys. They didn't. People who are zombies, they've got a shadow syndrome of autism or something like that. They don't get it. They've got tin ears. You cannot change them in any substantial way. Over to you.
You can change people 10 to 15%, and that's it. And if you've got somebody in any role that they need to be 15% better than they are, you might as well just fire them because I don't believe you can change them more than 10 to 15%. Now, there are two kinds of questions here that you're asking. Animal's question is interview coaching. It's not possible to change people. I can talk to you about how I can coach someone for success in the interview very easily. Or if you want to talk about my candidates that are going into my companies, the way that I prepare my candidates and companies is I send them an audio recording of me talking about that. I go back. I just spend, 5 or 10 minutes talking again about the job, where it's located, what's the name of the manager, what his background is or her background, what they're kind of looking for, what their hot spots are, what she might need to look at. And I encourage her to click on the links in the email that I send. And in the email that I send to her or him, the candidate, I also send, like 4 or 5 links to my top videos that I have on YouTube. And so my channel on YouTube, not to do a plug, but it is interesting, is Med Sales Recruiter. And there are five videos on there, one on salary, one on behavioral interview, one on panel interview, one on closing in the interview, and one on how to ask questions on the in the interview, that if my candidates are close to the mark of being the right person, listen to my audio, prepare for the job interview, and watch those four videos or five videos, I'm going to be in pretty good shape. Somebody's going to get an offer. Now, I sometimes coach a little stronger with candidates, but I have a problem with coaching a candidate too much. If they can't get the job offer on their own, again, it's going to skew my results if I coach them too much. Now, I don't feel that way about giving them resources because they have to go and participate in those resources, look at those resources, listen to those resources, invest time in those resources to be successful. So that doesn't bother me as much. One more thing on preparing the candidate. If I have something where the company has done a presentation on their business and I look for those online where the company may have done a slideshow or something like that, and a good way to find that is to go to the company's people and look at their LinkedIn profiles and look at their slideshows that they have on there, sometimes they have an amazing little ditty on their company that shows a complete culmination of all the information you need to know to prep for who the company is that you're going to interview with, and I share that with my candidates when they're interviewing.
Last question.
I want to take something up. I'll be back to you, Jen. I'll give you a chance. Now I'm being taken to task by Kathy Manis. She's on the line. Her son is autistic, and he's finishing college, and she thought I was saying something disparaging about him, maybe inadvertently, but let me tell you what I was talking about. There's a good article online by a psychiatrist called Michael Deutsch, and it's about shadow syndromes. You can look it up in Google. He says that everybody has shadow syndromes, hints of certain mental aberrations. And he believes that techies have symptoms of autism, so that what they suffer from, they are not able to pick up social signs of people's faces and things like that very quickly. Their attention spans are a little slower, and that means that they can focus on certain things for a longer amount of time. It gives them certain other strengths as opposed to social strengths. Janice was talking about metaphorical zombies, people who do not respond to you when you talk to them. Techies fall into that metaphoric category. So my suggestion there was that they have a shadow syndrome. They don't see the world the same way as you do if you're a fast talker and a sociable person and a good interviewer, and you're just not going to be able to convey your worldview to people, especially in 10 minutes for them to change before they go into the interview tomorrow.
You know what? You're absolutely right, because I'm engaged to a techie guy and he has no social skills.
Now that he's only going to change about 10 or 15%.
Exactly. So you know what, Animal? When you put it in that perspective, you're right, and I don't take offense to it, and I really thank you for clarifying it.
But I want to say, first of all, I'm not talking about anybody that has any syndrome at all that's identifiable or any of that, none of that. I'm talking about the folks that are in a talent pool for my jobs, which typically aren't going to be someone that has one of those situations going on. But they're not going in to interview with my company unless they've already passed it through my screen. And if they've been zombie-like in terms of not answering questions or communicating with me the way you were talking about, where they're just not being responsive or they're not being, proactive in engaging, then they're not getting into my interview process anyway, so I don't have to worry about prepping them.
Okay. Janice, back to you.
My question
was... You have a final question? Go ahead.
Back to prepping them. Individuals have specifics in their backgrounds that they have to justify. Don't you get into that? You can't do that with a YouTube video. You've got to get into, I believe, somebody's specific issues, because they will be questioned by a good hiring manager. Do you do that?
Yes, if I know that, if I believe that. But again, if I'm providing three qualified candidates, sometimes none of those candidates have this glaring issue that they're going to have to deal with, because I've already gone through everything that they've participated in and done, and I know where there might be issues. Let's say that I see someone with an issue. One of them
give
is
an example. You know what? Everybody's talking in general. Give give a real example.
I can give an unemployment. I mean, I get this from people all the time. You know, how what about this fact that I was out of a job for a year? What do you think about that? You know, do you think that's going to be something that I'm going to hit in the interview that I'm going to need to be prepared for? And my answer is yes. And then at that point, I'm going to coach specifically as to how I would think about answering it. I'm going to give them many different, you know, ways of saying it or thinking about it and how to think about it in terms of so that you're not, you know, anxious about it. And yes, I'm going to prep for any of those if I see something like that or believe there's something like that coming up. But typically, my candidates don't have some big glaring issue or they're not my candidate.
Okay. Okay, anybody else have any last questions after they've asked a dozen already? I'm open.
Do you work with unemployed people?
Not you.
Yes, I do.
Gary,
yes, I do.
You turn off
yes,
your
I
phone.
Do.
Gary, turn off that phone. He's in a park. King's Island.
I need to start yelling at me. I'll hang up, buddy.
Okay, good. Bye.
Animal, will you marry me?
Seriously?
Oh, God.
No.
Remember, he can
today.
Only change 10 or 15%.
Okay. Now, listen, Peggy. What about cupcake marketing? Do you do anything special to ingratiate yourself to your clients, you know, like Jerry does, or he invites them to rodeos or whatever he does out there where he lives?
Well, I don't do cupcake marketing because cupcake to me insinuates very feminine, please let me have your business, not because I deserve it and you can't live without me, but because I make these fantastic cupcakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have some explicatives about all that, okay? You need to do business with me because without me, you're not going to get the candidates you need to hit your goals, hit your budgets, and make your boss happy and keep your job. Okay, I'll send you a thank you note after you hire my person, and at Christmas I'll send you a $15 or $25 Starbucks card. And if you want to quit doing business with me, that's cool. It'll cost you a lot more when you work with someone else.
Wow, that's tough talk. You put that in the card?
Ask my people what they get. And let me tell you, I can explain to you why I do that. When I started recruiting in 99, I was all into that. You know, hey, lots of customer service. You know, touch, touch, touch. I touch, touch, touch now, but I only touch in terms of information. I call them, I email them, I send them something that I saw in the paper or whatever like that. But I spent over $2,000 on Christmas the first year that I was in business.
Who's making that noise? I will kill you.
I know.
What? I can get arrested for saying that.
You need to throw them off. But so I spent $2,000 on Christmas my first year of recruiting, and every year since that, I realized, you know, that it wasn't getting me more business. I'm spending money that I could be spending on myself. Thank you. I'm very interested in that. And I said, great. So everybody sends me a thank you note. I'll continue to send them a gift. And do you know that I'm
okay.
down to 11 years later? Do you know how many people I'm still sending Christmas to?
Don't know.
Less than 10.
Okay.
And I'm sending them a Starbucks $25 gift card instead of a $100 ham with a bottle of wine.
I got to tell you, you're lucky that Jerry's not on today. Anybody want to attack her on that one?
Me.
5, 4.
Do you have relationships with your clients?
Absolutely, but it's not based on me giving them gifts. It's based on me doing a fantastic job and being responsive and providing with the candidates that they need.
Do you talk to them about anything other than business, ever?
Yes, I do.
There you go. Animal will call that
politics,
marketing.
Politics? Politics?
No.
Politics?
I can talk politics with my managers.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, there's somebody out there swimming again. Listen, do you think it's important to meet your clients and candidates?
I think that if you can meet your clients, your relationship will be stronger and you'll make more placements with them. I think meeting candidates is a waste of time.
Meeting.
What?
Okay. Who's there now in a public place? Come on, have some respect. Okay. No. You said, now this is very interesting. You said meeting clients improves your business. Meeting candidates is a waste of time. How come?
Candidates are products, okay? And once you sell them, the shelf life is there, and you can continue to try to sell them at another place or whatever if that's what you want to do, I guess. But and again, they can become hiring managers. But if you dealt with them the way I deal with mine during the hiring process, they're going to come to you as a recruiter when they hire, too, because they will know how you represented the company that you sold them into and how you handled them, and they're going to want that for their kinds of people that come to them, right? But – So meeting your candidates, I don't see any value in that. If you can, the only thing that I see that I think meeting candidates does, and I go to trade shows to do this, is if I can say that I've met a candidate, it means more to my managers. But it doesn't mean enough to pay for plane tickets and shit like that. Personally.
You can't say that S word, okay?
I'm
no
sorry.
Bombs on this show, okay?
Who said
family
nice?
Show? What family show? Okay, but what about meeting the clients? Well, what's the value there? Sitting down.
Well, that,
and
now
talking
that's
to
where
them?
I would say, yeah. Go see your clients. Go to their headquarters. Wander around. Ask to get the tour. And here's the best one. I had this problem with this company that was having a hard time closing the deal with the candidates. They weren't being able to. Like with most of my candidates, I've got like a 90% acceptance rate, maybe 95% acceptance rate. But we were struggling with, we were getting turn downs. And so I went out to the client's facility. We're out there. I'm like, hey, why don't you take me on the tour that you take every candidate that comes through here on?
What? Why don't you take us on the tour? Okay, you asked about the tour.
Take me on the
tour
and let me see what you show these candidates. And they all looked at me and I'm like, oh, so you don't do that? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, gee, I think that might help with our close ratio if they could see how, you know, innovative you are and your production facilities, get time with someone else in the organization, see how the lunchroom is, you know, what are the benefits like, what does the HR chick look like, you know, show me the newest prototype, blah, blah, blah. Those people, when you make them a job offer, they're salivating because you've shown them a lot of love and sophistication and, you know, it really does help with the closing ratios. So, see, going to see your client, there's a number of things. You can get introduced to other managers and other divisions much easier. When I go to see my clients, I'll say, hey, who else should I see that I don't know about here? And my manager
really?
Will say, you know, who you need to see is so-and-so. Great. Take me over there. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. And how far will you go to meet those people?
I used to fly to Tucson all the time to see a candidate there, a client there. I've flown to North Carolina to see a candidate or client. I keep saying candidate. Client. I've flown to Maryland to see a client. I go to trade shows to see clients because I can see them in mass at a trade show. You know, you can see, you fly once and you can see 35 managers, so that's pretty cool. So I'll spend a lot of money. I've been to Toronto several times to see clients that are there at trade shows.
Now that's far. That's how much does that cost? $700?
$500. $500 for the ticket, a couple hundred bucks for the hotel room. $200 for all the other stuff. I'll spend $1,000 on a trade show.
Okay. Now, I got a candidate right now. The guy told me he's earning $130,000. I got his resume, and professional is spelled with a T in it. You know, the shun part is T-I-O-N-A, you know, A-L. And then instead of saying responsible for, he says responsible to. It's written in a moronic way. Let me just turn off that last person I opened up the mic to, you stupid jerk. Any area code 6262. Anyway, I wish I knew who it was, I would say. Okay, so that person, obviously, maybe they're dyslexic or whatever. You know, what would you do if you got a resume like that?
Depends on how much I like the person when I talk to him. What did you think of the person when you talked to him?
Sounded
did you love him?
Sounded pretty good on the phone.
Then I, you know, and this may not be what everybody'd like to hear, but you're asking my opinion. I'd be like, hey, man, is your spell check broken or what?
Uh-huh.
Agree.
And then if he acts mortified and he corrects it and he says all the right things, then I forget about it. If he's like, yeah, but he doesn't correct it and he doesn't say all the right things and I don't like the way it sounds, I'm done.
Okay, so you don't think that's a sign from the start that something's wrong with this person?
Well.
Professional? Okay. I don't think that was a spelling mistake. I don't think that was a typo. I think it was real. Although he was good on the phone, he says he's making big money. He does.
What kind of
job
is he going to be doing? Is he going to be a spell checker in his new job or?
No. Okay, I got your point. Okay, we're running out of time. We can always bring you back another time. But any question that you'd like to get to before I go back?
No, I mean ask if there's any from the audience. I mean,
you want you like
think.
That? You like the
I'm
audience asking you questions better than me? Okay.
Well,
anybody
no, but you
audience?
Aren't asking any questions. Ask one of your questions that you want to ask.
Who's that? You? Well, are you complaining now? Are you saying that? Like I didn't
yes,
ask you enough questions?
You said so you want to answer their questions, not yours. I'll answer yours.
No.
Pick one out.
Just give me a chance. Okay. Don't get huffy. Now, okay. So
five,
listen, give
four,
me,
three.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, your listeners aren't sitting here waiting for you to think of a question, Animal.
Okay, I'm not thinking. I got them all written down, okay?
Two.
Give us
one.
Your cold call. give us your cold call to a passive candidate.
Good.
Oh, God. Okay. So I've got to...
Well,
so
first
I've
of
got...
all, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. You know, we've had recruiters, successful recruiters on this show, who don't believe in cold calls. They believe that every one of your recruiting and marketing calls should be introduced by a referral. First of all, do you agree with that?
No, I'd be waiting a long time for that shit. I'm sorry, there's that language again.
There she goes again.
Beep.
Yeah.
Can
okay.
you beep that stuff out?
Don't worry about it. Okay, so, Nat, you got an accent. We can't understand it anyway. So, cold call to a passive candidate.
Well, so first of all, I think that if you're waiting and you're not cold calling, you're missing a lot of opportunities in life, and I would just challenge you to try it, you know, occasionally and see how it works, because sometimes your cold calls can be amazing things, right, both from a candidate and a client perspective. I do like introductions through emails first in terms of if I see a candidate that I really like, let's say that I see them on LinkedIn or someone refers them, says that you ought to call so-and-so, I figure out what their email address is or message them through the social media that I can to get to them. And I say, hey, I'd like to chat with you. Is there a time that we could talk or, you know, can you give me a call? And I have a really good reputation. It wasn't always this way. I mean, when I first started recruiting, I didn't have any reputation and I couldn't do this. But basically, if I tell someone to go look at my website and Google me and then call me, they always call. So, I just tell them, you know, find that social proof that I am who I say I am and then give me a call because we need to talk. All right? So then do you want more from that than that about what I do with them at that point?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. But do you get like people lose emails or they don't see them, or what's your percentage?
Yeah, well, if I only give them like a day, that's it. Again, I think time is huge, so I don't spend 2 or 3 days waiting. I give them 1 day. If they don't call, then I call and I say, hey, look, did you get my email? And they say, yeah, but I didn't get around to it. Great, no problem. Can we talk now or do we need to talk later? If they didn't, great, I sent you an email. What's your email address? Maybe I didn't get the right address. I write that down. I don't even ask them if I can have it. I say, what is it? You know, because if you expect something, you're more likely to get it, right? And then I say, you know, I don't want to just bring up the job because if they are this interesting to me, maybe they're right in the same area and it might even be a company that they know. Or, you know, to be honest with you, I don't like to be strutting around talking about all my clients because there are recruiters out there, we talked about the low bar of entry, who are desperate to find out the names of your companies because for some reason, if they can't get clients on their own, they think maybe they can get yours. I don't understand that, but that's what it is. And so what I'll say to them is I'll say, hey, I need to talk to you about your job. I saw your LinkedIn profile or I saw this, and I'll ask for some clarification if I need it in order to know for sure that I should be talking to this person. And then I say, look, you know, you've been there for a while or you haven't. Can you tell me, you know, what your level of satisfaction is with the job, and if you could improve it, what would it be? And I try to walk them through that whole, you know, Steve Finkel thing of getting, you know, to know them. And I do remember that conversation because, again, that's that conversation that you can come back to on the counteroffer piece, right? And I get them talking about themselves. People love to talk about themselves. And then I'm listening and deciding whether or not I'm going to talk to them about the job description or the job that I've got. I may not bring it up ever if they're not the right candidate. Or I may have determined that they are the right candidate, but I don't want to give them much power. So I'll say, hey, look, you know what I really need is X. Do you know someone I should speak to about that? Because this is the kind of thing I'm looking for. And then if they're interested, they'll be like, well, why aren't you talking to me about it? Well, we could talk about it. Do we need to talk about it? And see, I've got them to chase me, which is psychologically important in this whole thing, right?
Okay, so we're coming to the end. I just want to understand something in what you just said. You'll contact these people, and if you're not presenting the job, what is the logic? What is the reason you say you're contacting them?
Well, I'm contacting them about a job, but that doesn't mean I got to tell them about it.
How do you get off the phone without telling them about it?
Well, I'll just say, look, you know, I had a position that I thought was a possibility based on this conversation. I don't think it fits. You know, if they are really interested at that point, you'll find out because they'll be like, well, why doesn't it fit? And you'll be like, well, it's this or it's that. And maybe they can talk you out of it, and then you do give up the job description. But, you know, I just don't feel any inclination that I have to do anything. It's all up to me. It's my choice. I can talk with them about what I want. If I don't want to talk to them about something, I don't have to.
You just say, look, pal, you know, it's not for you. Don't bug me. Is that essentially it after you talk to them?
Well, yeah.
Really?
Or,
and then you call them again?
But I'm always going to do something nice for them if I can help them. So, like, even if this isn't the right position, I always try to, and I know that there's a buddy of mine, Kevin Kermis, out there, who he always tells candidates that they should try to look for jobs through being a provider for recruiters, right? Always give recruiters other names or whatever. And I'll always ask for referrals or who do you think I should talk to or this or that. But I also will ask them, what can I do for you? Is there ever anything that I can do for you? What can I keep in mind for you? You know, is there something else I should know? And then I'll follow up on it. I always try to help people out no matter what, even if their job isn't, even if they're not for me on my job, I'll try to give them advice,
And if the person says, you say, this job's not for you, and they'll say, what can I do for you? And you can say, well, you can tell me about that job that's not for me. I'd like to hear about it anyway. You'll say anything except that. Is that what you'll say?
Well, I'd be like, okay, so you want to know about the job, but my job has X and you said you needed Y. And my job has Z.
My last question, what if you just don't like the person's personality? They've got all the qualifications, but you don't like their personality.
Depends on if I like my client. Because if I like my client, I'll send the candidate over to him and I'll say, look, I got to tell you, this guy is perfect for the position in terms of X, Y, and Z, but, I found his personality to be challenging. What do you want?
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you'll.
And then I have found, and I know this will sound, I didn't feel this way 10 years ago, but you know what? Managers want what they want. They don't necessarily want what I want them to have. And in fact, I actually believe what I want for them would be better for them, but they don't think that way, and they don't write checks that way. So what I do is I provide them with exactly what they want as I see it. Plus, I provide them with hors d'oeuvres and dessert options if they like, and that way I get their business. Because when you go at it where you're going to try to give them what you want, you're not going to make as much money. You'll make more money providing your customer with what they want.
Okay. Now, hold
and it
on
isn't
here.
Always what I would hire.
Is Kathy Mann is still on the phone?
Yeah.
Are you Jerry's not here. Are you taking scores for the after show?
I sure will.
Pardon me? There's somebody talking on the phone.
Like that.
It's Mike. It's Mike A. Stringer. I bet you.
No, it absolutely is not Mike.
Okay. Are you taking scores on the after show?
Yes.
Kathy. Okay. Anybody who wants to give a score, stick around and talk to Kathy. Peggy, how do you like having you on the show?
What's the score? What's the score thing? What's that?
You're not welcome. I don't. Are you? Are she welcome on the show? There's an after show now where they give scores and say how much they hated the show. Okay.
And we stay online.
I don't stay.
To do that.
I don't stay. I usually don't stay. I let the people talk. I don't know. Usually they don't like to have the guest there either. But
I'll go.
Okay, but I'd like to have you back. I'd like to have you back another time on the show. Will you come back to this show?
Wait. Only if you let me use my extreme skilled recruiting skills here. I need to know from the crowd how many of you can I count on giving me a thumbs up in this after show.
Yeah. Well, you'll see in a minute. Here we go to the after show!
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kath.
Hi. I thought it was a great show today.
Peggy, you there?
Yeah, who's there?
I'm here. Mike's here.
Oh, Mike, what do you think?
I thought it was a great show. I give our guest a 30 on a 1 to 10 scale.
I know. She was awesome.
Jeremy, is that you? I hear noise.
Oh, yeah.
I got blamed for that for some reason.
No, that was actually my dog.
Well, no, this is TV or people talking or...
Oh, yeah, there's something in the background.
Yeah, and that, well, he's safe.
What about for Animal, Mike?
Exactly. So I'm going to give Animal a 9 today, too, because he really, for the most part, kept his mouth shut and let us have a really productive conversation.
It was a great, great show.
Well,
okay, who else is on?
I have a question. Peggy, are you on?
We can do MTV Network employees.
Peggy.
Fine, because there are MTV Network employees.
Oh, yeah.
She may be talking to somebody else.
No, really,
this is Janice.
I
thought it was a super show. And I'll tell you how I knew it was going to be. Because Animal started out very quiet. If you go back and listen to the replay, he didn't start out screaming and yelling like he always does. He started out very quiet.
I created them a unique epics.
He was passive, so Peggy, I thought you were great, but then we're on the same page, so I'm probably biased. You know, I give you a 10. People can learn an awful lot. Job seekers can learn an awful lot from listening. Animal, I give you a 10 also. I think it was perfect. I wouldn't change a thing about it, and I'm really thankful for coming on.
Okay, who else is on? We need more sports. More than two.
Maybe we should all just be real quiet and listen to that person conducting their business in the background.
That's a
good
idea.
They may create like a general Miami HR inbox, so it's not attached to
Miami HR.
That's an HR person.
It is an HR. HR.
That's why they don't know any better. I'm sorry, buddy.
So,
is it the corporate HR guy?
Yeah.
Like Suzanne,
oh my God. Okay, who else is on, guys?
We can critique them.
Okay.
So what? I've got a question.
Yeah.
You guys, Mike, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, and Kathy, you're there, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Do you believe that this caliber of recruiter, like Peggy is, okay, do you believe that that kind of person can be taught all this, or are they born with that kind of temperament?
I think it's both, because I was trained exactly like she was. I mean, everything she was saying, that's how I was trained.
So I think you're born with it.
Go through with it. Yeah, I think you have to have the chutzpah to go through with it, basically.
I call it bloodlust.
Yeah.
You may as well say what it is. And I don't think you can. I don't think that good recruiters can be made. I think that people with potential can be taught, but you either have it or you do not.
Right.
Well, I think you're born with some of it. You know, the other part of it is desire. I mean, you have to want to be as good as Peggy is, and you know that's the problem with today's recruiters. I don't think many of them really care about being as good as she is.
Well, it's what I was saying before, okay, and you got to really quickly say things on the show, is that so many people never recruited until the 90s when it was easy to make a placement. It was really easy because companies were screaming for people, and it didn't take a whole lot of talent
right.
to source or prep or accommodate client companies. And I think that because of that, the reputation of the recruiting community has gotten worse. It's always struggled, but I think it's gotten worse. And I feel bad for a Peggy kind of person who's got to go on and has it together and has to deal with the fallout from the people who do not know what they're doing. A lot of them have been forced to quit, though. I think that's a big part of it. So, Mike, it's not that they – I don't think they know what they're doing. A lot of them haven't been trained.
Well, here's the thing, and I was trying to say this, and Animal cut me off. You know, a big part of it is the Internet. So when I first started recruiting, I didn't even have a computer on my desk. I had a yellow legal pad and a phone. And not many people – I mean, listen, that's a skill. That's a trade. Not many people still have that skill and trade. As a corporate recruiter, I see it all the time. I cannot tell you how many people will beg me to do business with them, and then I start doing business with them, and they're sending me resumes off Monster or Dice of people that they've never even spoke to. It's ridiculous. I mean, the Internet has ruined our business as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
now, listen, it's still a tool in a belt, and I use the Internet. I'm not going to say that I don't, but what I'm saying is the advent of the Internet and the ability to access candidates and low-quality candidates in most cases so easily on the Internet has really sort of destroyed our profession and the people coming into it.
Not only that, our profession, it seems like, Mike, don't you feel that like 80% of the recruiters out there don't know how to cold call?
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's funny
just
because
rely on the Internet.
What I hire for my company, I hire for a certain profile. So I like to see people that have agency backgrounds, and I like to see people that have some recruiting, some corporate recruiting experience as well. But I also like to see somebody that's been in this business before about 1997 is usually the number that I put on it, because I figure anybody that got into this business prior to the early to mid-90s knows how to pick up the phone and make a call. If they got into it after that, they're barely even screening candidates on the phone. They're doing everything by email. They're finding people on the Internet. It's horrible. So when I sort of bash third-party recruiters, that's a big part of what I'm talking about is just – you know, the back piece isn't there. The relationship isn't there. You know, they haven't picked up the phone and asked about salary information and history. And, you know, what are you really looking for in your next opportunity? Like, none of those questions seem to get asked anymore.
Well, and you know what else is interesting? And the one thing that Peggy said that I did not agree with is that she does not feel she called candidates products, which I think is important that candidates understand that. And I think that she also said that she did not feel it was important to meet them. It's important to go to trade shows and chase your clients that are going to pay you, but the quality of the product you're about to showcase that represents your reputation, she didn't feel important enough to even see them. I find that unusual.
Yeah, but Janice, I was a corporate recruiter too, and I worked over – Mike, I worked with Sodexo for almost 6 years, and I was over like 8 states. There's no way I could meet my candidate.
Well, no, I'm not saying all of them, but the total philosophy that it's not important – that, you know, your candidates are commodities. They're like eggs or loaves of bread, and you know it's you can talk to them, you can see them from afar, but it's not important ever to meet them. And there's something about, maybe that's why I became a job search coach from a recruiter. I think it's very important to meet them, because if you don't know what you're sending over to somebody, that may doom you.
So in today's world, that becomes a little more difficult. Like in my situation, I live in Philadelphia, and I do most of my business. Right now, my clients are in Massachusetts and Texas. So I spend half my time in Massachusetts, but I never get to Texas, so I never meet those candidates. And even the ones that are interviewing in Boston, I mean, if I can be there, I am, but oftentimes I'm not. So, I mean, I think there's ways to handle that properly. But I shared your concern with the comment about candidates being products. I mean, if I was her candidate and heard that, no matter how true that statement might be, it would be a little bit difficult to swallow. I mean, I will often say, for example, you know, my commodity is people, and you can never judge what a person will do. So that's a phrase that you'll hear from me a lot, but I don't know that I would have in a public forum said, you know, my candidates are my product. That's a little harsh.
And I totally understand what she's saying, too. Totally understand what she's saying. But I think what the lesson that I'm trying to take, because I am really on our job seekers. We've got a pretty big portfolio of job seekers. I'm really on them to listen to the Animal Show and to learn the recruiting mentality and the recruiting process. And I think that, you know, these are the people who have hurt feelings because they don't get callbacks. Well, we love you, but you didn't, you know, we're not going to send you in. They need to learn what recruiters sometimes see them as, okay, and accept that. And understand, you know, we're teaching our job seekers to cold call. And I just think that listening to her, I think she's wonderful, okay? And I think a lot of recruiters can learn from her. They should be listening also, and they should be in recruiter training school or something. But but the job seekers really need to know where they fit into all this stuff.
As a candidate coach, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
You know, I've got to get off the phone because I have a mover here, so can I let you guys just talk?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, I'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, Kath.
Great comment.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Is it just you and I left on the phone?
Yeah, and I got about 5 minutes. Go
ahead.
And Matthew Jones, 2-3.
Oh, good.
Oh, good, there's more people here.
Maureen, is that you?
Yes.
Oh, cool. You got a score?
I know. Well, I thought a 10 and 10. Hands down, 10 and 10.
Okay, cool. Matt?
I tweeted that out, 10 and 10.
Okay, excellent. Okay. Mike, go ahead.
I was just curious if you coach your candidates that if they are having a difficult time reaching the HR person or not getting feedback quickly to bypass HR and try and get the hiring manager by email or phone.
Always.
Do you?
Absolutely. Of course. I'll tell you why. Because we teach our people to do the same thing. I'm just an old recruiter is all I am. So all I'm teaching my candidates to do is what used to work for me and still does. Okay? And that means try to form a conversation with somebody that works for a company you're trying to get into. Get as close to the hiring manager or HR if you can. If HR will not work with you, I'm all in favor of doing the appropriate chain of command. If HR will not work with you, don't stop there. Talk to somebody who hires. Yeah.
Interesting topic for another day.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. But again, not to the point of dissing HR. I don't believe in that, okay? But I do believe that you don't stop there. And again, HR, recruiters, hiring managers, the reason that they're not responding is not because they're not nice people or, you know, maybe A, they don't want you, or B, they haven't had time to get a hold of you. We've got a bunch of that going on right now. And, you know, these job seekers have got to understand companies have a whole lot of other things to do than decide whether they want them back.
Technical Stress just sent me a direct message that he's trying to get in on this conversation and doesn't know how to make his line active without Animal here. Is there a way to do that?
I don't think so. I think maybe – I'm not sure Jerry could have either.
No, nobody can in the after show, I don't believe.
That's too bad. That's too bad. Well, maybe we should, you know, what we could do, let's take it up with the animal and see if he wants to have maybe a roundtable show. I co-host the Paris show. We do that there, too. So there's all kinds of different venues where we could do that. You know, no disrespect to Michael, but obviously, you know, let's go to him and see if he wants to have some kind of a guest or a roundtable discussion. It's a
last comment.
The people's coach on. Go ahead.
I'll say last comment I have is that I have a show idea. I'm proposing, and I put this out on Twitter last week. I'm proposing a roast of the animal as a good show.
You know, he'd probably love it, actually.
He would love it.
Wow. All right, you guys, I got to go. I've got a client later. I'll see you later, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.